began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. David Blair, Enzo Tamanini and Callum Stewart back after a little bit of a break over the festive period. Hope everybody listening enjoyed their Christmas, whatever they got up to. Obviously, sitting here New Year's Eve, Hogmanay, we're back to discuss the three games that have just passed, the two games that are coming up, and a little bit of news. We'll maybe discuss what we think is maybe going on in terms of the vacant manager's post. And there's, of course, some good news about the QP women's team and a game at Lesser Hamden at the City Stadium to discuss as well. Calum and Enzo, how are you both doing? First things first, before we dive into the, let's be perfectly honest, the misery of the last 10 days or so, we'll talk about some of the good stuff. Calum, you first. How was your Christmas? What did you get up to?
I had the classic Christmas of not doing very much, eating lots, drinking quite a bit, and yes, I'm at that stage now where my body's like, please go back to some sense of normality, but I'm riding it out for a wee while yet. But no, it's been very pleasant on the whole. Everything aside from the football has been nice and enjoyable. But yes, that's unfortunately been fired in between it to try and bring the tone down a wee bit.
I'm pretty similar, to be honest with you. I've had a good couple of weeks. Been off work for a bit, and I've overdone it slightly with the food and the booze, but that's all right. I think that's the whole point, isn't it? And it's not done yet, because obviously today is New Year's Eve, and I'm sure we've all got plans for tonight as well. But I think as of next week, might be time to calm down a wee bit.
Yeah, you're right. It wouldn't be Christmas without, as you both say, taking that a little bit too far on the Christmas dinner and, yeah, a few drinks. So I, myself, likewise, done the exact same as you guys. It's been pretty enjoyable, aside from a few games of football that we're going to have to go on and talk about now. It has been, there's been three games since we last recorded an episode. We've been away to Greenock Morton, home to Dundee United on the BBC on the Friday night, and just yesterday we had Airdrie at Hamden. We've decided that we're just going to try and talk about these three as a bit of a collective rather than drill into each one, because for everybody listening, I'm sure you're well aware that it hasn't been particularly great. The performance against Dundee United was, perhaps in the first half, certainly in the first half, I felt pretty miserable watching it on the telly, but this by full time and the second half performance picked up a little bit. We attacked a little bit better, not much. Overall, I was pretty satisfied with the Dundee United result, especially given how good they are, and you know, a clean sheet for the first time in what feels like forever, which is always good to see as well. But that was sandwiched in between a very disappointing 1-0 defeat away to Morton, and quite possibly the worst defeat of the season against Airdrie last night. Enzo, let me come to you first, because you had some pretty strong words after the Morton game in particular.
I did, yeah.
In our Gwee group chat. It's may well have been one of the reasons why we decided not to talk about that, but we're talking about it now. How do you sum up these three games?
Right, okay. I'm going to give you a bit of an overview of how I feel about all three of them, then just kind of collectively. So the Morton game was possibly the worst game of football I've ever attended in my entire life. I hated every second of it. It was just utterly brutal. The way they went a man down, I feel as though the referee was probably quite generous to us, to be honest. Now, I think that was a red card. Not entirely sure it was a penalty, but they went a man down. We had a penalty. Brilliant opportunity to bring things back. No need, a full half of football ahead of you to hopefully get the win. Missed the penalty. It was a terrible penalty. I was glad that Rudy Payton was taken off the penalty against Airdrie, because I don't think he's a great penalty kick taker. He's proven that already so far this season. And then in the second half, we were just utterly, utterly pathetic. It was just, I've never seen a team of football, I've never seen a team try to play football with so much space and so much time on the ball and be able to create so little. It was absolutely horrific. And the worst part about it was, see, when we missed that penalty, I knew we were going to lose that game 1-0. It was just so obvious that we were going to lose that game 1-0. Then we went into Dundee United, where I feel as though the game plan was to honestly play for a nothing each from kickoff, because I think we were just desperate to prove that we can sort of defend a little bit, given how poor we've been at the back over the past few months. And the team probably do deserve a bit of credit, because I felt as though there was some real fight and it was a really good effort, and we looked fairly well organised against United. They were a wee bit toothless. I would have expected better from them, if I'm honest with you. But in isolation, the United result was a good result because they. I still think they're going to go on and win the league. I know that Wraith are doing all right, but I still think come the, you know, come May, they'll be champions. So in isolation, that was all right. It was a decent performance in a game where most people would have expected us to get pumped. And then we get to Airdrie, where the first half was okay. Don't think there was too much between the teams in the first half. But the second half, Airdrie just pressed us a wee bit more and we couldn't deal with that. And the second half was possibly the worst performance of the season. It was just, it was gutless. There was a real lack of any dig or fight. It was horrific. And I think you're probably right in saying that that was the worst loss of the season. I turned to you, Callum, at halftime and said, there is no excuse for not winning this game of football now. And it's almost like, you know that meme, that sort of hold my beer meme, where it's like, right, okay, let me just prove to you that it can always be worse and I'll somehow completely make an arse of this. It was horrendous. And to be completely honest with you, the feeling around the club right now is awful. It just feels like everybody's really low about everything on and off the park, and it's not a great time to be a Queen's Park fan, and it's a pretty horrific way to end what has been a brutal 2023, to be frank.
Yeah, I guess I'll start with where you finished there. And if you compare to where we were at this point at the start of the year, I guess, of 2023, the positivity around the club was pretty high. And even if you go to the summer periods when Veldman came in and Bucher, etc., again, positivity pretty high, until to land where we are right now is, it's pretty grim. I mean, on the game yesterday, I think it just yet again exemplified everything that's wrong with this team. The mentality of the team is so unbelievably fragile. I genuinely can't quite believe it. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen the clip of their Broth goal yesterday, where they had a goalie come on and score from 30 yards. And it just blows my mind that we can't grind out anything at any point. I mean, fair enough, the Dundee United result. But I mean, actually grinding out a win against a team who are equitable to us in terms of standard of players, etc. I mean, both ourselves and Airdrie are not going to be world beaters at the end of the season, and for us to collapse that way again, it's like any time that we need to go out and win a game, the players' heads go. And it was the exact same yesterday, and there were so many frustrations for me from that game, because you've obviously got the mentality side of it, but even from the managerial perspective, what did Airdrie do? They brought on a sub, and then they decided, instead of trying to play passing football, which wasn't doing anything for them in the first half, they just had two guys on the shoulder of our centre-backs and our full-backs the entirety of that second half. And fair enough, they were offside plenty of times, but we play such a high and effective line that at some point they get through, and ultimately that's the winner for them at the end of the game. And the first goal, you've got a corner, which is the most predictable series of events you could ever have. Like, what's every single team done against us the entire season? They've lumped corners on the penalty spot or in or around our goal, and we just can't defend them. We stand zonally, we don't have anybody on the posts, and regardless of how many guys we have there, we don't jump because none of them have got the run, because we're doing this whole zonal marking thing which I'm not a fan of. So yeah, that was pretty bad. And I mean pretty bad, it was utterly tragic. And if I'll go to the Morton game next. For me, I hated the Airdrie game. Because it's like, do you want to chop off your left leg or your right leg? But the Morton game for me was actually worse, because there was just no excuses. And if you think of, like, I had a wee look at some of our stats over the calendar year, right? Which is a pretty grim read. But if we go for the calendar year, so last season, from January through to the end of the season in league competitions, we scored 30 goals and we conceded 30 goals, so sort of break even. This season, so far, we've scored 18 and conceded 34. So clearly, we're just not scoring enough goals.
Well, and we're conceding too many as well, though. That's a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely massive amount of goals to concede. But you just need to watch any one of our games to see why we don't score goals. Like, how many times have we came on and discussed the slow build-up, the letting teams reset? And it was the exact same yesterday. Anytime anybody got the ball, they turned backwards or they turned sideways. There was absolutely nothing. We have this obsession with passing out to the wing and then guys getting caught in a triangle, which is nobody inside of the pitch for them to pass to. It's totally, totally pointless. And teams just know how to play against it. So I just, yeah, there has to be a total reboot of the club in January. Like, it sounds so dramatic and so sort of I don't know, clickbaity, but it really does. Every single aspect of the club has to be gutted and thought about again, because we certainly can't continue on this one. And as for the Dundee United game, fine, 0-0, total anti-football. Best that we probably could have hoped for against Dundee United, despite Payton missing the only good chance of the game. I'll accept that, but in the context of everything else, it's like nothing other than winning games at this point is good enough. And as soon as we go against a team where we're expected to compete, we can't do it. We just can't do it. So, yeah, aye, great. Your turn, David.
I don't really know where to go. I think you've both summed up the feelings and certainly sort of analysing the games is pretty well. I have to be honest, maybe it's the recency bias and it's just the latest of the poor results, but I don't agree with you in regards to the Morton game being the worst, although I think I might even just make the argument for it myself. I mean, thinking back, the red card for, was it Muirhead or Oakley? I can't remember which one it was that got sent off, but... on the day, and even on like Pine Bovril a couple of days afterwards, you had like the Morton fans going, that's a disgrace, how's that? And then shock horror, they appealed it, and the appeal was rejected. I don't understand how they were complaining that that wasn't a red card. It was a pretty bad tackle, and it was right in front of the ref as well. But the fact that we were not able to take advantage of that, you know, Payton missing the penalty, and then as Enzo says, you just know that when we miss the penalty, we don't take a chance like that. Just the way that this team is playing right now, you know that we're not going to go and create anything else. And even with Morton having 10 men for about an hour or something like that, that game, there was nothing else to talk about in the second half. It was just so poor. The way that we played, that day and against Airdrie last night, which utterly horrific. This that high line, that offside trap worked against Dundee United, made Corey Watt look like the bit of the dumpling that we all think he is, but then again, when you watch a game on Friday night, he goes and puts a hat-trick past Partick Thistle, so maybe we should give ourselves a wee bit more credit and for that game, but it's also hard to do that when, you know, either side of that, it's two utterly abject performances, and that one last night, or yesterday afternoon, against Airdrie, just, the first half, as you both say, you know, we got together and spoke at half-time, the first half was fine, the way that we were kind of containing Airdrie at the first half, you think, yeah, okay, maybe we can. Still needed a second goal, but again, as I've just said, you know we're not going to create enough chances. The decision-making in the final third at times is utterly ridiculous. Like, it's this constant, you know, you've got to keep going. It's got to go wide before it comes in. There was two or three occasions throughout that game where I think Jack Thompson had one. I'm sure Jack Turner had the worst one in the second half, where he gets the ball in the middle, like in the middle of the pitch. He's maybe about 20 yards out, just at the edge of the box. And instead of just you going, I tell you what, bugger it, just have a shot, see what happens. It's still looking for another pass, and that pass breaks down. It completely ruins the play. We turn over possession, and yeah, usually we're too slow getting back. It allowed Airdrie to counter, which was their game plan, which absolutely worked, especially in the second half. When we persisted with that, as I say, this offside trap where it worked against Dundee United, but Airdrie brought on Big Todorov and they had, I can't remember the other striker's name, but the sort of pacey guy, yeah, okay, they were caught offside three or four times, but Callum Ferry also made three or four big saves, pretty much one-on-one, because they kept getting in behind. Surely you have to look at that. Obviously, Paul Noyton's currently in charge of the team with Tam Aware, whoever else it may be that's helping out. Surely they had to look at that and go, okay, this isn't working. We need to take a step back. We're going to keep letting them in, and eventually they're going to score from it. Of course, sure enough, they do. After, as you said, Cam, yet again, another set piece, another corner. I'm sick of complaining about the corners this season. I've done it many times. What else could we possibly say? It needs to be sorted. It's utterly shambolic. And, yeah, then they get in for the offside. They beat the offside trap, they get in behind. Stormed out of hand in the 93rd minute again. I believe I was declaring, what do we fucking expect, I think is what I was saying. I mean, what do we expect at this point? Like,
that's what I don't get. That's what I genuinely don't understand. Like, we have played the same system for 4 months and not won a game of football. We haven't changed anything. You might tweak around the edges with players or some slight alterations, but we have done the exact same thing for 4 months and continued to lose all the time. Nothing has changed. We still play the same high line. We still play the same setup as corners. We still try and attack in the same manner. And I mean, you listen to the Noyton and Veldman, etc., and they're clearly bright guys. Do you know what I mean? Why is this the only solution that they've got available in these games? I'm sure they'll come on and they would say that there's intricacies about how they're setting up in their attack and playing. Clearly, the Dundee United game was a difference to what we've usually done because we just didn't try and play football. But in terms of actually trying to go and win games, we set up in practically the same manner every single time, and it just doesn't work. I have no idea why we continue doing it. I would just love to see his attack with a wee bit of pace at some point. I mean, when you're looking at that lineup yesterday, I mean, there was no way that we were going to be able to attack with pace because Jarrett isn't the fastest. Dom Thomas, fair enough, he's pretty quick. But the rest of the team, when you've got Longridge and Spong in midfield, I mean, that's not a pacey two sitting behind them. Turners can be sort of quick over 5 yards, but there's just no impetus in the lack of us being willing to try and play balls over the top or behind the defence. I think we'd done it once and we had that really good opportunity. But aside from that, I think I was from Jack Thompson, actually, wasn't it? That ridiculous through ball. But aside from that, we're just always trying to play these wee nippy 1-2 triangles and it just gets us absolutely nowhere. It's really confusing and it must be so demoralising from the players. I mean, you listen to them talking at the start of the season or even at the start of this run and midway through the run, and they're saying how great the stuff that they're learning is, and I'm sure there is an element of that, but at this point, if you're getting told to do the same thing, how can you believe that? How can you believe that that is a correct way to go about these games when we've just proven time and time again we don't do it? That's why I'm just like, I'm at that stage now where there has to be a full reset. And if I'm frank, I was really, really disappointed when we when Veldman left that we weren't ready to go with a new manager almost immediately, because It's a wee bit. I mean, it's not a wee bit. It's in sort of crisis territory, isn't it?
It's frustrating as fuck, to be honest with you, because it's not the first time we've seen this from the club where big decisions need to be made, whether it's around signing players, bringing in new managers or whatever, and we just don't hear anything. Nothing happens, and eventually, weeks down the line, a decision's made because you can't literally go on forever without anything not happening. Veldman's appointment as well took a long, long time to happen. The Coyle stuff when we appointed him took forever to finally happen. It's just, it's nonsense. And even if we have a manager in within the next week or two, I bet we don't make any signings until about the 20th of January or something, even though we're in a situation right now where these things need to be happening urgently. We should be getting signings in as soon as tomorrow, to be honest. We should have guys in and ready to play on Tuesday against Partick Thistle, but it's not going to happen. We'll maybe sign one guy on board and come like the 24th of January or something. And if that is the case, if that's genuinely what happens, then there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that we will be playing League One football next season, because as it stands, the team isn't good enough. I think a manager can come in and potentially get a bit more of a tune out of these guys. I think that is possible because we do... There are elements there that make you think, okay, we should be getting more results than what we're doing. Like you said, like if a manager can come in and see that these guys might be able to work in a slightly different system, then we might be able to pick up a few extra points here and there. But without three or four experienced players coming in to shore up this squad, I still think they're going to finish at the very least ninth and probably lose a playoff to Hamilton or Cove or something like that. And that would be really, really grim. It's the lack of urgency in getting these things sorted quickly is a source of wild frustration for me.
That lack of urgency, unfortunately, that's been a trademark of Queen's Park in the last few years, as you say, not just on the park, but off the park as well, isn't it? It's worrying, and for that reason alone, I'm not particularly optimistic that things will happen quickly, despite, as you correctly say, things need to happen urgently, and with the transfer window opening, tomorrow, we absolutely need to be... We can all see where the weakness lies in this team, or the weaknesses are in this team, and I don't know. Do you think we're gonna have to wait for a minute, I suppose, because prior to Bucher's departure, we knew that he was the one that was doing the transfers and such, so without a director of football and without a permanent manager right now, I suppose we're going into this transfer window, a very important transfer window, sort of blind right now, aren't we? So yeah, we really need something to happen quickly there. God knows what will happen. There's not really been any, I suppose moving on from that, there's not really been anything linked to any sort of names linked recently, has there? Obviously, it started quite early with like some Scott Brown and Charlie Mulgrew being linked to the media, but it's been pretty quiet recently, so I don't know. Is it any of you guys given any thought to who you think or who you'd want coming in? Are there any new names that may have popped up? I did see, and I joked to you guys yesterday, that Lee Johnson obviously gets sacked from Fleetwood. A little moment of me, I did have, oh my God, could you imagine? And then I went, oh my God, would you?
Surely we wouldn't be daft enough to appoint a guy that's literally been sacked by two clubs before the end of the year. Like, he was appointed, was it Hibs? When did they get sacked by Hibs? A couple of months ago?
Yeah, and then he went to Fleetwood Town, and yes.
Then he's been sacked already. That's mental.
You say surely, Enzo, but...
Come on. I hope not, but you never know. I wouldn't put it past him, honestly. Do you remember that article with Scott Brown where he said he's waiting for after Christmas and New Year and that for something to potentially get back into football? It wouldn't surprise me if that's part of the reason why we haven't made the decision yet, because it could be him, and we were waiting for that. I don't know. If that's the case, actually, that would kind of annoy me a wee bit, because we should be saying to a guy like Scott Brown, no, we need you right now, we need help immediately. Do you want the job? Come in and take the job, otherwise we will look elsewhere. But it wouldn't surprise me if he was the guy that we wanted, and we said, okay, Scott, don't worry, we'll hang about and wait for you for 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, I think we do need to remember, like, how attractive a prospect are we?
Because
you have one look at this squad and you're thinking, not exactly ideal, and we have no concept of what might be available transfer-wise in January, because we know that, I mean, you just need to look at the off-field side of the club and how bolstered that is, how much that takes away from the actual playing squad, I'm not sure. So it's probably not as an attractive prospect as we would like to think it to be. It certainly isn't as attractive a prospect as it was in the summer. So it's going to be potentially less good than what we hoped. I kind of think that they were maybe hoping that if Knighton came in and suddenly got a tune out of the team, that they would be able to continue on with that. I mean, that would obviously be a cheaper option than bringing in somebody that's a bit more established. But that's, I mean, surely...
If that's the case, it's insanity.
Well, yes. I would like to hope that it was more they've got the person that they want and there's just whatever reason they can't start until the new year. In terms of who that is, anyone's guess at this point. Just hopefully, obviously, we don't want it to be Malky Mackay. My standards have lowered, I'll put it that way. I'll take anybody that looks as if they've had some sort of managerial experience and have done all right at some point. That's basically my expectations right now. We just need somebody to come in with a different mindset to say to these guys, forget everything that you've been told over the last period of time. We're going to figure out how to win a game of football. And to be credit, like, I guess to give some credit to Knighton, this is a very low baseline to operate from. I thought his interviews have been a bit more pragmatic than some of the sort of processy stuff that we heard from Veldman. He seems a bit more, no, we actually, like, these guys just need to win games. And as much as we might complain about the managerial element of this, the players need to take a genuine, long, hard look at themselves. I mean, some of the performances we've been seeing from some of our senior guys, and you can see their heads have gone on the pitch. Like, these are experienced pros, some of them, and they've been absolutely nowhere near the standard that I'm sure they expect of themselves. And you can start to see the fragmentation within the actual squad itself. I don't know if you've noticed it yesterday, but... Like, I say, at one point I seen Dom Thomas shouting at Knighton. I seen McKinstry getting an absolute shedload of abuse from a couple of the players on the pitch as well. Whether that's through him not doing what he's told or just not knowing what he's meant to be doing, I'm not sure, but it just looks as if all over the place, nobody's stepping up. There was a lot of, I don't know, I just felt like guys were shying away from everything when they got the ball yesterday, and that's part of the reason why it was so negative. Nobody was willing to do anything, or they didn't know what to do, and you need somebody to kind of take the bull by the horns and think, right, I'm actually going to do something here and drive us forward, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, as you say, there's obviously some reactions on the park. I mean, got a comment as well after the Morton game. There was, I believe Tommy Robson was over and I believe reacted to some things that a couple of fans were saying as well. So, I mean, the frustration's seeping through the team, but it needs to be channeled and turned into better performances and yeah, a win. You know, that's us four whole months with a win in the league. You know, a couple of weeks of August as well. So, and then, well, we've got Partick Thistle on the 2nd, and then we're back on the telly next Friday, aren't we, against Dunfermline, which...
Oh, is that a TV game?
I forgot that.
Which is a bit strange, because obviously we were on the telly last week as well, and given that they only get two games for each team, I find it a bit odd that they would give... they would put both of the games at Hampden so close together, just run about Christmas and New Year. That seemed a bit strange to me.
Like, the BBC would have been trying to get out of that, showing two games for us after... the game against Dundee United, especially when you had the same day it was Wraith against Ayr, was it? 4-4 the same day. So either they've been kicking themselves for that. But yeah, they're stuck with us next Friday as well. We've kind of touched on a little bit about 2023 as a whole in the calendar year. Got the actual stats of sort of games played and wins in the league and then of course all competitions as well. So by my count, we have 46 games played this calendar year. Now, we know that we've gone on this winless run, you know, obviously this season, but out of 46 games played calendar year, I don't know if either you've checked this, do you want to hazard a guess at how many wins? So this isn't including any friendlies, this is just the league.
I know the answer, unfortunately.
You know the answer. Calum, have you checked it? Do you want to have a guess, or...?
I actually had to look at this, but I just did it based off of league games this year. So I had off of the league games, I had 36 games and I had a win percentage of, 28% or something like that. So I'm going to guess it's probably a wee bit high if you're including some of the cup games where we had the early rounds that were winnable. About a third?
Not quite, no. 46 games played. By my count, we have 12 wins across all competitions in 2023. Draws and 25 losses. You say the early rounds of the cup. We won two cup games this year because, of course, we, the group stage, we beat Elgin 5-0 and then we beat Bala 3-0. But all the other, I mean, we didn't even beat, we drew and then lost on penalties against East Fife in the cup to begin the season, and we got beat by Queen of the South. So, you know, all the other cup games and everything, you know, it's, 46 games played, all competitions, 12 wins. On the transfer market website, it has the league and the calendar. I'm not 100% if it's updated for last night's game already, but it claims we've played 35 league matches and won 10 in 2023.
Aye, so it's 36 now, but yeah, obviously yeah, the win number there doesn't change at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, so it's the curtain closes on a pretty disappointing 2023. I think it's that's putting it very politely. And we'll obviously wait and see what comes in 2024. We obviously need to have a manager coming in as soon as possible. And yeah, we start the year with two games in a week, which we'll come on and talk about shortly. We will break this run of misery up right now with a bit of good news. Obviously, the Queen's Park women's team, as we always talk about every week, they had their last game. I don't recall if we actually covered their last game of 2023. I can't remember from when we did our last episode, but just to recap, their last league game, they were away to Livingston and it was a 1-0 win there with Abby Callaghan getting the only goal of the game. So contrary to the men's team, the women's team finished 2023 absolutely flying, top of the league. I'm just going to get the league table up just now. I mean, that gap is still about 10 points or so. I'm just scrolling for the league table right now.
It's more than 10, isn't it?
12-point gap at the top of the league, yeah.
Kelly drew the last game before the wee break that they have over Christmas and New Year. Kelly drew with, I can't remember who it was, and Queens obviously won that game 1-0, yeah.
So I actually, you've now got Burham, your Thistle have caught up with Kilmarnock. So there's two teams in second, joint second place on 24 points. Queen's Park absolutely flying at a 12-point gap to the second place teams. They are flying at the top of the league, 36 points and 36 goal difference as well. So yeah, an excellent season so far, and they will begin 2024 playing a Scottish Cup third round tie against Bonnyrigg Rose at Lesser Hampden, the City Stadium. Something that I think everybody around the club is, or certainly the fans around the club, have been wondering, you know, surely Lesser Hampden sets itself up. It's probably perfectly suited for the women's team. I mean, not number one as well. It's in the south side of Glasgow. It's not up at New Tintle Park. It's great to see that they are playing a cup game there. Obviously, currently announced it's just the cup game, but perhaps maybe if this goes well, they get a good crowd in. Maybe they'll be able to do it for the league games coming up as well. So it'd be great to have them there for the rest of the season. But certainly next Sunday, so that's Sunday the 7th of January, 3 o'clock kickoff at Lesser Hampden. I'm sure we retweeted it already. But yeah, obviously you pay at the gate. It's a fiver for adults, £1 for concessions. We'll make sure we share that again leading up to the game itself next week. But you know, that's great news for them to be given the chance to play at Lesser Hampden. It's long overdue, isn't it?
It's definitely overdue. Yeah, I mean, this team are playing fantastically. They're having an incredible season, better than what I think anyone would ever have expected going into it. And all their home games should be at Lesser Hampden. It's just, it's bizarre that they're, you know, that they've been punted over to play at New Tintle Park, where I think a lot of teams play there just because it's because of the surface is decent, and I suppose they can rent it out easily enough. But they should be playing on the south side, the City Stadium, Lesser Hampden, whatever you want to call it. Very clearly isn't being used for much. I realise that we're occasionally training there, Scotland are occasionally training there, and there are probably some concerns around keeping the pitch in good nick, because it is a fantastic pitch. That's probably the one thing about that stadium that I can't criticise. But in my opinion, the women's team who are performing the way they are should take priority over those things, and they should be playing their home games there. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'll be in attendance. I hope as many people as possible will be there to support them, and I hope it won't be the last time they'll be playing there too.
Oh yeah, 100%. It's a great opportunity, and what a season to be able to sort of get people involved with the women's game, especially at Queen's Park. So yeah, I'll also be there. Looking forward to seeing what it's like. And I totally agree. I hope this is the start of them just playing at Lesser for the foreseeable, because I honestly do think there'd be a pretty decent appetite for it, and especially when you've got any form of success like the women's team do just now, it's a great chance to get people involved with the club, and fingers crossed it goes well.
Yep, and see, I think we will be making it, all three of us getting along to that, so looking forward to it, and great to watch a Queen's Park team win a game, won't it, as well?
Fingers crossed,
yeah, it certainly would. So, as I say, we'll be sharing that throughout the week. I'm sure the team themselves will be promoting that throughout the week, so we'll certainly do our little bit to help out as well. So looking forward to that next week. As I say, let's talk about the men's side as well, though. There are, before that game, next Sunday, we have two games. So for the men's side, we've got Partick Thistle on the 2nd at Fir Hill, and we have, as we've already said, Dunfermline next Friday, and that's another game live on BBC Scotland. Enzo, I know last night in our post-match debrief, you were, I think you made a pretty big claim that this might be the first game since COVID that you're actually questioning whether you're going to bother going. Now, I don't know if the dust has settled yet, but now in the cold light of day, do you stand by that? How excited are you about going to Fir Hill potentially?
Well, I'm not going. No, I can't justify it right now, to be honest. I've spent a lot of money following the team over the past few seasons, and the majority of it's been fantastic. But at this point, until I see some pretty clear changes, I'll be attending home games and stuff. But until things turn around, unfortunately, I just can't financially justify at this stage continuing to spend so much time and money watching a team that is doing nothing but depress me every week.
You're right. I mean, it's quite incredible, strong words, but I mean, it's how certainly the three of us feel, and I'm sure many others listening will be feeling that as well. Callum, what do you make of that upcoming game?
Yeah, I mean, I can't go, thankfully, so it's out of my hands, but I'm not sure I'd be choosing to go either, to be honest. It's that sort of balancing act, isn't it, between supporting your team, which I think, everyone has obviously put in the hard yards over the last few years, despite the success on the pitch and getting promotions, etc. You think of everybody trailing through to Steny, etc., etc. I think as far as being able to attend games, it's been a wee bit of a slog, and it's that balancing act between supporting your team and sort of recognising that it's still meant to be an entertainment product at the end of the day, and you're doing this apparently for leisure. And yeah, I mean, 4 months, lots of money spent. It becomes more and more difficult to want to do that on a weekly basis. I can't go on Tuesday. I don't expect us to do anything at all. I don't see how we can go to that game and win. If I'm going to look into my crystal ball and predict what's going to happen, I'm going to assume that Lawless or Fitzpatrick will get one-on-one with one of our fullbacks, beat them, cross it into the middle of the box, and Graham will be standing isolated from two of our centre-backs and score somehow. I assume that will happen at some stage, but yeah, it's not great. I mean, the only hope that I've got over the next wee period of time is that ideally today, tomorrow, I don't know, we appoint a manager, and fair enough, I think even if we were to appoint a manager in the next 10 minutes, they wouldn't be in the dugout for the game on Tuesday, but I would hope that they're available for Friday and the upcoming games, because as we've said, that I think that's the only way that you're going to get people engaged and a wee bit motivated again, because I would fully expect this to be one of the lowest attended games of the season, or the lowest attended games at Fir Hill from our support, because what incentive do you have? I just don't know. Other than sheer habit.
Yeah, I know it's annoying, because I missed, so this season I've had to miss one game just because I wasn't in the country at the time, which was a bit silly. Last season I only missed one game as well because it was a Friday night trip up to Cove and I couldn't get the afternoon off work. Season before that I think I had to miss two games. It's the first time in quite a while that I have just actively made the decision I will not be attending the game. And it's not, I want to attend games, I want to be excited and looking forward to the football, but right now it's very, very difficult. And it doesn't help that our record at Fir Hill recently has been poor. We've played up there so much. Partick Thistle away back in the day would have been such an exciting, you know, an appealing day out and stuff like that. But we've having spent a full season there and having played them already twice away this season, haven't we? It's just, I just find it difficult to justify, especially week after Christmas. You know, it's a bit of a tight time of the year for cash at the best of times. So yeah, I've just had to make the decision that I won't be going.
Yeah, I mean, I made my decision that coming into the new year, obviously with the Euros coming up, and I've got a wee trip to Germany for that. I decided that, you know, 2024, I'll be picking and choosing, and I'll be, you know, saving money towards that, because of course that is the light at the end of the tunnel of this season for me, quite personally, is that trip to Germany for watching Scotland in the Euros. But despite what you are both saying, I have that little niggling thought in the back of my head. While I agree with the reasons that you guys have both given, and it's perfectly reasonable to say those things, I have that little devil on my shoulder going, "I bet this will be the game that we win." And CT have gone.
It won't
through
be those though.
I know, but I've got that little voice. I know, but that's the thing. That's what that wee voice is telling me, and then it's telling me to go and spend 50, 60 quid to get up to, you know, the West End of Glasgow to get into the game and all that, just to watch us lose 3-0. And I know that little voice will be laughing at me on my shoulder come full time when that happens, but it's telling me right now, this will be the day. This will be the day you need to go.
See, I'm hoping that I'll have a reason to be looking forward to Wraith away in a couple of weeks. That's what I'm hoping that I will, I don't know, something will happen between now and then, whether it's a result against Thistle or Dunfermline between now and then, or new manager in a couple of signs, I don't know, but I really want the club to give me a reason to want to travel through to Kirkcaldy that day.
Yeah, that's the main thing, isn't it? Like, we have to see action from the club. Like, the club owe the fans a responsibility of giving us something to support, do you know what I mean? And
yeah, but
they're not doing that right now. They're not doing it.
It's not just giving the fans... something to support, Cam. It's the fact that we're literally hearing nothing from the club right now. It is genuinely an absolute disgrace. They're not telling us anything. I mean, we only discovered the other day, and people listening to this are probably hearing this for the first time. We only found out the other day that Sam Kane, who had been on the bench whilst Wes McKenna had been injured, has been sent on loan to East Kilbride. Did anybody have any idea that had happened? Why would the club not tell us that? What is the reason for you not saying that your third choice goalkeeper is away on loan to a Lowman League club? There's only one reason why you would not share that piece of relatively unimportant information with the fans, and it's that you simply do not care what they think, and you have no interest in being open and transparent with them. You just don't care. That's it. You just don't care. That's the only justification for it.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. He's also played the game. So he played against, he played for East Kilbride. I think they were playing Gretna, and then he was on the bench in their last game. So clearly kicking about the club. And yeah, I mean, that takes all of 5 seconds to post a generic article on the website. We still have no idea about what's happening with Bucher, the stadium, yada, 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 rinse and repeat. It's,
oh, well, the stadium, if you read the article where they announced that the women's team would be playing that cup game at Lesserhamden, did you read the full article where it said that they're going to be playing their game at the recently completed City Stadium? So apparently that's it, completed.
Yeah. Completed until it's not completed, do you know what I mean? I just... And that's the thing. It might be completed and they might have other plans. I'm sure they are working on a manager. We talked. You mentioned urgency, David. I'm relatively sure there probably is some degree of urgency in the background, but I think it's urgency in absence of competence, which is the fundamental problem. We can all look busy behind the scenes. We can all say that we're really, really busy, but you need to do something that actually shows that what you are doing is the correct thing, and that's what's not being demonstrated in any facet of the club right now. And we know we're not the AGM, etc., that's all coming up, and accounts will be getting, you know, that the club is spending an absolute shedload of money on wages, and for that to be getting spent and for us to not be seeing the club progress off the field, because none of us are silly, we know that money is getting put into the club right now, which is not equitable to our fan base or our income, and right, we're not stupid. That is worrying in itself. But we were always under the guise that up until this point in time, this was going to then produce a sustainable model for us to operate from over the longer term. And until we can see some evidence of that, like, you have to be able to challenge people who are running the club, because there isn't, as far as we can see as fans, there is no visible plan other than potentially get a sign. Like, this is why I'm so worried about the next managerial signing, because if we go and sign one of your Malky Mackays, etc., I just come back round to the point of, I'm like, okay, well, so we don't have a long-term plan. We're just going to try and go in the mould of every other Scottish club, which we don't have the fan base to emulate. So how long does this last before we spiral again? It's concerning, and I frankly, I don't know how you resolve it. I really don't. The structure of how our club is run is confusing. I mean, we're pretty involved in the club, obviously doing the podcast, etc. And I still find it kind of hard to get my head wrapped around who's pulling the strings. I mean, you've got, obviously we know that Willie Hawkey is input money into the club, but I don't know what level of influence that formally has, because as far as I can see, he's meant to be the committee, etc. And we know that Dempster's obviously on the payroll. Who's actually making all those decisions? And that's why it's been frustrating for me since Bucher left, because you mentioned this, David, that the one thing that you knew about Bucher, regardless of what you think about his success, etc., or lack of it, is that you knew what his responsibility was, and you'd know going into January that he was going to be the one that's figuring out who we're signing, et cetera, et cetera. And he did communicate what his ideas were for the club, and whether that works, clearly it's not working right now. At least you had an idea of what we were working towards, where there's no element of the club right now where I genuinely have any concept of what the, I don't even think I know what the short-term plan is. It just feels like we're existing and hoping that something will eventually change.
Yeah, and obviously, as you say, with the AGM coming up, obviously I think there's new nominations for new club president and committee members and all that, but it does, I mean, how long have we been saying that you don't know who is really in charge at the club? And we see, when it's as bad as that, you just don't know, at the end of the day, who's accountable for the decisions that are being made, because you do, you know, as you just said, we've got a CEO, we have a club president, we have committee members that are given various meaningful or meaningless jobs to keep busy, but at the end of the day, who is in charge? Because you also hear that, obviously we all know that it's Willie Hawkey is putting the money into the club, but you hear rumours that sometimes he's making the decisions, but we just don't know. It's when it starts at the top, it's clearly filtered down through the club, and it's a pretty rough place to be. There is a pretty good post on Pine Bovril that kind of sums up how the feeling's made. It was posted last night, so I'm sure that was not long after that really disappointing result. by the poster. I hope they don't mind us giving it a shout out, but it was a poster Spider 1975 posted in the big Queen's Park thread. I'll just read through it very quickly here. And it really sums up just how we're all feeling, because it's not the losing. You know, we're Queen's Park fans. We've been used to watching teams lose for years, but it's the contempt of the stadium that's been designed to accommodate the elite rather than punters. It's a lack of rigour in checking details, whether it's player eligibility or the misspelling the team name on said stadium. If you remember that, that's one of a number of cock-ups throughout the years. It's the disregard of tradition when it comes to the kit design and rather horrific home kit. I think we all agree that as well. Complain about the director of football, inexperienced managers, a CEO that is currently posted missing, despite last year was very visible when things were going well. Talking about G4S, the stewarding issues at Hampden, a soulless Hampden when we've cocked up Lesser Hampden, when we were supposed to be there, not giving the women's team the chance to play at Lesser Hampden, making them go and rent a pitch on the other side of Glasgow when we have a perfectly good stadium there. Yet, you know, Celtic under 21s or Celtic B, whatever it is, when they're playing in the Youth Champions League, they're allowed to play there, so it's a bit strange there. All this while, we are trying to grow a support, and you can tell clearly that the players are... They must be as fed up as we are, and that's a real concern. It's a really good post. I've skimmed over it very quickly there. I want to give them some credit. Go and have a look there and give it one of your wee green dots on Pine Bottle if you haven't done yet. But as I say, you both have read that post, and I know you wanted to bring it up as well. It does very succinctly sum up just how we're all feeling right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course it does. Of course it does, because there's not a single person out there that is angry exclusively because we, as a club, have a pretty poor team at the minute. We've all seen objectively worse Queen's Park teams. I recognise, obviously, they've played at lower levels. Maybe not quite a run like this or a team that's playing as badly as this, but they're still playing at a much higher level than some previous Queen's Park teams that we've seen. And it's important to take that into account. You know, we've all seen the team finish bottom of League Two, and that wasn't a pleasant experience for anybody. It's just the way everything is around the club. There's just a real sense of negativity. We don't know what's going on. And I think a lot of people are legitimately just concerned for the future of this club, because there's a lot of money being put into it. And I don't mean just by us as fans to follow the club everywhere. I mean, there's a lot of money being spent on things like wages of staff and players and whatever else. And that comes at risk to the club. And if we don't have a clear path for how the club is then going to start working sustainably, having spent all that money and hopefully recoup it and potentially start turning a profit and whatever else, then you can understand why people are legitimately concerned about where things are going to, you know, where things are going to be in 4 to 6 years. And for me, honestly, I can even accept the club not being sure about a lot of things. It's just that it's the contempt that does it for me. It's the fact that they clearly just do not care about the fans. They have no interest in keeping the fans up to date with things. It's almost as if they just expect that we're going to turn up anyway. These guys have been watching Queen's Park for years, so it doesn't really matter what we do or don't tell them. They'll be at the game, they'll be at the away games, they'll give us their season ticket money, they'll give us their membership money. Who cares what they think? Who cares? And it's pretty horrible, to be honest. It's just that is not acceptable. And I'm not entirely sure much will change when I know that there's the votes for the committee and the club president and stuff like that. I don't think much or anything will change with that, unfortunately. I don't know where we go from here unless someone at the club starts taking a bit of responsibility for it. And I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, because you change a president, you change a committee. I think fresh blood in there would be definitely a positive step, but what influence does that actually give you in real terms? I'm not sure about it. And it's tough, right? Because I think we've tried to be relatively constructive about our criticism of the club over the last year, and I think we probably held off longer than maybe what we would be normally in terms of calling out a lot of this stuff, because we wanted to give the opportunity to succeed, and it's clearly not happened. But you just get to that point where it's like there is genuine concern for like the next 12 months of the club? Like, what is it that has to change for us to feel part of the club again? Because it really does feel like you've got these sort of custodians which are holding the club, and then they're handing you like wee breadcrumbs every so often to kind of see you off for another period of time and hope that does enough to appease. And we've asked the club if anyone would like to come on and have a sort of reasonable conversation about some of this stuff, and we didn't get any response on it. So that offer is obviously still there, but it's just a shame, because it feels so fixable. So much of this feels so fixable, whether you're to have any sort of proper fan representation. Like, I know that a lot of teams have sort of, was it fan liaison groups or stuff like that, any sort of consultation with fans on stuff, ways to get people involved with the club at a more practical level, because there are a lot of simple steps that could be taken, and that all just come back down to transparency. I mean, you can accept being in a bad situation, but you can't accept being told why you're in that situation or what the plans are to get out of it. So, yeah, fingers crossed there's some sort of substantive change in the next month or so, because I just think people get less and less engaged, and that's when you get into real problems. I mean, we're sitting here every week doing this, doing a podcast about the club, and the three of us are like, I just don't want to go to the game on Tuesday. I mean, when would you be saying that about a sort of festive period football game, which is pretty easy for us all to get to? It just, it doesn't make sense. And then multiply that by everybody else who's maybe a wee bit more passive, and you get yourself into a pretty tricky situation. But my overwhelming feeling is sort of what you said, Enzo. I think they probably believe that it will come good eventually, and it might. And I think they just don't see the necessity to take fans with them on that journey, because if we become sort of competent again, then fans will come back. And I'm sure that's true, but it would leave a particularly bad taste in the mouth. And it's just that total lack of trust that you've got for any of the decision making at this point. It just doesn't help anybody.
And I just want to clarify, by the way, despite how negative I've probably sounded on this podcast, and I suppose all of us probably have done, there's nothing any of us want more than for the club to be a success and for all this to work out. That is what we're desperate for, that to happen. We're desperate for the club to see success on and off the park. And see if it turns out that they do have everybody's interests at heart and they have a solid plan and it comes good eventually. I'll hold my hands up and say, listen, I was wrong to maybe say the things I said, but it's just, for me, it's just, fans need to be part of that journey. They need to let us know what's going on. It's just the lack of anything from the club is what makes it so bloody frustrating.
That's why you're not wrong, though. That's what I mean. Like, see if it does turn out to be good, right? I obviously, we're all desperate for that to happen, as everyone who's a fan of whatever football club you support, of course you're absolutely desperate for your club to do well. And it might all come good, and we might be sitting here thinking, God, mind when we were sitting at on Hogmanay talking about how terrible everything is, look at us now. That might happen, but it doesn't need to have us in this position.
That's true. We can only
talk about what we have information on, and that information is nothing. So when you don't have any information and you can see every single element of the club failing, what else are you meant to do other than question the decision making?
Yeah, spot on, actually. Yeah, that, just because even if everything does work out, that doesn't mean that we're inherently wrong to be criticizing what we know to be true right now.
Yeah.
No, you're absolutely, absolutely spot on there. I don't know. I honestly really appreciate people are still listening to this. It's been one hell of a big moan, but it's long overdue, and we're just all really feeling it after that really disappointing result last night, and a pretty terrible end to what has been a tough year, as we've talked about on the stats and off the park as well. We normally always round off our episode by looking at the games and doing a prediction for the scores for the upcoming games. I dread to ask yous, we haven't even done it for the couple of games recently, but I doubt any of us would have got any points anyway, so are you wanting to do that?
I think we can turn this around a wee bit, right? So, well, not maybe not quite this second, but what we'll do after this, right, as a wee incentive, we'll maybe go and think about our favourite moments of the last calendar year, because whilst the end to last season and obviously most of this season has been crap, there's been individual games, which I think we've all enjoyed, so we can maybe pick out a few of them as a wee bit of a nicety. But yes, on the predictions and stuff like that. So for Morton v ourselves, obviously that was a disaster. No points, no nothing. We all predicted that we'd win. We did not win. Do we want to give a man of the match for that performance? Anyone? Or I'm also open to...
I wasn't there, so I'm going to have to defer to you two. And I say, from what I recall, your comments after that game, I think you may struggle.
Yeah.
I can't remember who I gave man of the match to on the bus.
Nah. Binned. No one. Dundee United. So, I mean, usually when we are not doing an episode and we have a game that we've not previewed, we would post our predictions. Festive period, light depression got the better of us after that Morton game. So we have done none of that for Dundee United or Airdrie, so no predictions. Not that there'd be really any points, I guess, unless you predicted the first goal scorer for the game yesterday. Man of the match performances for, I don't know, Dundee United game, Jack Thompson.
Jack
probably.
Thompson for me, yeah.
Jack Thompson got it on the BBC. I know Callum Ferry got the QP sponsors one. Ferry had a couple of saves to make against Dundee United, but I think Jack Thompson, especially again filling in at centre back, which he obviously did yesterday, against Dundee United, he had a decent game, so be giving it to him for sure.
All right. Yeah. Yesterday. Did anybody get anything for that? Ferry, maybe?
Yeah, I guess.
Give it to Callum Ferry.
To me, it would be Callum Ferry for, I'd say, three or four good saves in the second half.
Yeah,
keeping us in it.
Still lost, but there's only so much you can do.
Exactly.
It's very indicative that Ferry's going to end up running away with the man of the match thing because nobody else is doing anything in the team, unfortunately. Okay, cool. Right, let's rattle through these predictions then. So, Thistle v Queens, David, you can have the honours. You and I are still sitting, or I guess in terms of the scores for the year, I mean, really, there's been next to no change for, I don't know, months because we've not been doing anything. So I am on 11, David, you're on 11, Endo, you're still winning with 15 points, which is paltry amounts in comparison to last year. But yeah, David, you can go first in your Thistle v Queens prediction.
3-0 Queens Park.
Okay. Okay, on the New Year's boozy early. Right, what goal scorers are you going for?
Dom Thomas, Jack Turner, Rudy Payton. Why not?
Cool. It'll be myself next. I'm going to go, I'm still not going to predict us to lose. I'll go for a draw. 1-0 Queens. And I'll have, I'll go Turner. He seems to be our most potent goal scorer in recent times. Okay, Enzo.
2-1. I'm going to go 2-1 Queens, obviously.
Nice. I think it's very evident in our voices that none of us believe this, isn't it?
No, there's nothing to believe.
Right, goal scorers.
Dom Thomas and then Rudy Payton.
Thomas and Payton. Right, so we need to do that again for the Dunfermline game. I'll go first this time since we are on the same points, David. I will go against Dunfermline. I'll have 2-1 that game, and I'll have first goal scorer Payton, and then I will have Spong. Why not? Right, David.
I'm tempted to say 3-0 again just for the par. Fine, bugger it. 3-0.
Nice.
Why not?
Goal scorers.
It's gotta be a bit different here. Let's go. Jack Thompson score first. Alex Bannon and Callum McKenna to do with the Arbroath. <Super. laughs>
Come on, that's how bad it's got. We're not playing any of our subs anymore. They're all crap. We're putting on Callum McKenna. See, to be fair, with the ball at his feet, if there was a goalie in the league that I'd trust to do all right, it'd probably be him.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. There's reasoning behind it, which is definitely sensible. Yes.
Oh wait, Enzo. See, for the last game, who did you have as first goal scorer?
Dom Thomas.
Right, David had Dom Thomas.
So oh,
swap it then. Swap it. Did you take Payton?
No, you can have Payton. Payton and Thomas. Right, so Payton and Thompson are taking for this one, Enzo.
I'm going to go 4-1. Because I think we'll have a new manager in by then, potentially, and the team will be somewhat rejuvenated. I don't think we'll necessarily have any signings yet, but aye, team will be somewhat rejuvenated. New manager, 4-1. Turner, first goal, and to get two. Peyton will get one, and Tommy Robson will get one.
Okay, cool. So see on the signings then, so say, let's assume that we've got a new manager in this week, right? And you can make three signings for the new year. What positions are you taking? Not necessarily who it is. We're just going the assumption that somebody better than what we've got right now, but...
I'd probably take two centre-halves and a striker.
Aye, nobody in midfield? Yeah.
No, I don't think... I think with another striker and a better defence behind them, I think our midfield would be fine.
Yeah, I think I agree with what Andrew said there. We need another striker in for competition and to push Rory Payton along. You always need a bit of competition in the squad, and he doesn't have any. And when Payton's gone through a wee bit of a dry spell right now, I think, in terms of goals. So, but we don't have anybody else to play up there. So, I'd need another striker in to play with and to fight with Payton. And yeah, two centre-halves were weak there, with Charlie Fox obviously being out and, you know, out long-term, but again, never been communicated, but it seems like he's going to be out for the foreseeable. We're putting Thompson back into centre-half, and I would say that Thompson's probably our best midfielder, and you could argue the best player in the squad right now. Putting him back at centre-back, just we're then losing him in midfield. I think Bannon's done well, but we need somebody else. We need somebody else fighting alongside him. Tizzard's been in and out of the squad. Reed's been in and out of the squad. We desperately need... If it's not fullback, we need centre-halves. Maybe a centre-half and maybe another fullback, again, to rotate and provide options, whether that's left or right-back, because, you know, we've been relying on... McPherson has been, again, hot and cold. But we've been having to put Louis Longridge back at right back, or at left back it's either Tommy Robson or Cammy Bruce, who, I, you know, like everybody else, are not performing as consistently as we would like. So yeah, we need some defensive reinforcements, and certainly we need another striker.
Yeah, I think definitely the striker one, both from the perspective of like giving Payton competition, because yeah, it's unhealthy for him to also not have the option to be rested. I think he could use it potentially. He's struggling right now. But also just to give us a different shape, I think Payton might do well if he had somebody up with him that can share the load a wee bit with the running. I don't think he's a lone striker. And the way that we set up right now with our two wingers just hugging the touchline, he's constantly isolated and constantly having to come so, so deep to get the ball. So I think him having another striker would be good. Definitely a centre-back. Like a big defensive centre back. I don't care if you can do 40 passes around defence, just somebody whose prime motive is defending. Because I think if you put a Bannon, you put a Fox, any of the guys that are kicking around at centre back right now, I think they would do much better if they had somebody whose core responsibility was just defence. Like, I still think that we'd be doing infinitely better this season. Hindsight's 20/20. I probably wouldn't have made this decision in the summer either. But if you had Lee Coldea kicking about, I think we'd be at least a few points better off than we are right now. But he obviously moves to Hamilton and is doing very well there. I think my third choice one, I would be looking for a left back. I was torn,
by the way, between two centre backs and or a centre back and a left back. But I still think Tommy Robson would improve again with a more solid back pairing.
I don't disagree, but I feel like they do not have trust in Bruce in that position.
Yeah.
Because he's came on at left wing a couple of times that he's made appearances recently. I think he struggled a bit with the defensive side of it when he's been playing at left back, and Robson's been struggling for a while with it. So I'd be relatively content with a more defensive minded left back who can rotate with Robson, give him a bit of genuine competition, because I think that'd be healthy for him. I think I'm less concerned about the right side of the pitch. I think McPherson has a potential, if we're playing well, to add a lot more value going forward. So I think that would be okay. And obviously we've seen Longridge fit in at right back repeatedly throughout the season. So I think that would be my three. And I agree with what you said, David. I think I think the midfield with Thompson in it is infinitely better. So I'd be more inclined in fixing those centre back position than and getting Thompson back into midfield than the other way around. Because I think we've got a lot of talented guys that kick around the middle of the park and on the wings in principle anyway. I just don't think they're getting utilised correctly. I feel like a lot of these guys that if you just plop them into sides that were doing relatively okay in the league would look great. I don't think there's a lack of talent there. I just think there's a lack of structure and correct system to fit how they play.
Yeah, I agree with that. You wanted as well, Cam. Let's round off, shall we, by looking back at 2023 and Brian, grab onto a couple of positive memories from the year. You wanted to talk about like favourite game of the year that you've been to. I say there's 12 wins to choose from. Enzo, I think you said before we started that it would be the 6-0 Cove win. I think that's probably a very easy choice for all those that were there. Cam, I don't recall if you were, so what game would you be saying was your favourite of the year?
I really enjoyed see the game that we were back at Hampden and we played Hamilton and we absolutely rinsed them. I really enjoyed that. I thought that was an excellent game.
What about a game from 2023? Because that was December 22.
No, I don't think it was.
Was it not?
It was in February, was it not?
Was that not February?
I was sure it was December.
Oh, maybe you're right, actually.
Yeah, it was December 22, wasn't it? Against and then it was the week before.
We beat Hamilton 4-1 at Hamilton in February, didn't we?
The 4-0 game was in December, you're right.
God almighty.
That's how bad it is, you're going back to 2022. Oh,
what about the 2-0 game against Thistle just after New Year? That was the 2nd of January. That was a really good game at Oak Hill View.
That was good. Well, the Hamilton one was what I had in my head, so let me come back.
You did beat Hamilton away 4-1 in February. Yeah. That might be what you're thinking of.
No, I'm definitely not. It was 100% the Hampden game, because the reason that I enjoyed that game so much was because it felt like it was a sort of homecoming to a degree, a bit of a homecoming. It was kind of like, oh, look, this is what the future could be. And the standard of football on play that game, that was that fantastic team goal that was it Grant Savory that ended up finishing? I can't remember. Unbelievable goal. Great game. So, yeah, my favourite game of 2023 was a game in 2022.
Another one that's worth, I think it's probably worth mentioning for the people that were in attendance was the Inverness away game in the Cup. Because the game itself was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, we found out shortly after full time that we were going to be papped out of the tournament anyway for fielding an ineligible player. But that was excellent before we knew that. So, until we get chucked out of the cup, that was a really, really good one. But I think for me, I would probably have to go with the 6-0 game up in Cove, because I really thought after that game, we are going to go and win the league. And then 2 weeks later, I think we sold Murray.
Yeah, on the day of that Inverness game in the cup, and for those that were at that game, that again felt like a moment. Okay, we've just sold Simon Murray and everything, but the performance on the night, everybody kind of believed that
100%.
We'd still be all right, and then as you say, you managed to enjoy that for about 90 minutes, I think, before discovering what was going on. I wasn't at that game. I think it's quite incredible that I'm maybe going all the way back to the 2nd of January this year with that 2-0 game, the Partick Thistle. The 4-1 win away at Hamilton was good as well. I'm probably going to have to pick the Partick Thistle. I was going to say, and it's obviously, bear with me a second, but see, just for like the day and the occasion and what it was, see that Dundee game to end the league? Okay, yes, we lost, and obviously we lost the league, and Dundee got to celebrate all in front of us and all that. But that might have been just one of the wildest games of football I think I've ever been to in my life. And I think for that still sticks out a little bit in 2023. I know, as I say, it's not a Queen's Park win, so I maybe shouldn't go on about it, but it was just for, again, as I say, the occasion. It was the winner wins the league and everything like that, and 3-3 at half-time, wonder goals and everything else going on. Of course, as I say, it didn't end up going how we wanted it, but as I say, for the occasion, that's got to be right up there. But yeah, I think I'm probably going back to the clean sheet against Partick Thistle to start the year.
That was good.
Aye, that was good. I also did enjoy the 2-1 v Inverness. If you remember Baghezi scoring, that was one of the few games where we actually had a comeback. But aye, some pickings.
Yeah, it really is. I'd say when I'm suggesting maybe a defeat, there we go. I think it says it all. That was, there we go, 2023 kind of summed up, and well, we're all well aware of this current run we're in. Fingers crossed as we start 2024 that things will take a turn for the better, but I suppose with Queen's Park you never really know, do you? But I think we'll leave it there for now. Callum and Enzo, it has still been a pleasure as always. Continue to find us on Twitter, at Spiders Talk Pod. Find us on Pie and Bovril as well, in all the threads relating to Queen's Park. Thank you for sticking with us for this episode and through a difficult year. Hopefully, maybe a little bit of group therapy here may help. Who knows? And as I say, we'll see what next year holds. But thank you once again for listening to us, and we will see you again next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. League match or friendly, but they're the cause of the dandy. Play for the sake of the game. Play for the sake of the game.